Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. In this episode, we visit the Western genre and the facts behind some of the classics. I hope you enjoy the show. Let me introduce you to Rowdy Yates.
Streams are swollen, keep them doggies rolling rawhide. Through rain and wind and weather, hell bent for leather, wishing my gal was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good victuals, love and kissing, I waited at the end of my ride. Move him out, hit him up there, move out, hit him up rawhide. Keep moving, 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 though they're disapproving. Keep them doggies moving rawhide. Don't try to understand them, just rope and throw and brand them. Soon we'll be living high and wide. My heart's calculating, my true love will be waiting, waiting at the end of my ride. Move him out, hit him up, hit him up, move him out, move him out, hit him up, raw high. Cut him out, ride him in, cut him out, ride him in, raw high.
Yeah, Rowdy Yates, played, of course, by Clint Eastwood. Now, you're going to tell me that wasn't a movie. I know it wasn't a movie. It was a huge TV show. It ran for 7.5 years. But for me, it sort of opened the gates to Westerns. And the song, you know, was so synonymous with Westerns that it sort of... I suddenly realised what a Western was when I heard that song. That was the theme tune sang by Frankie Lane. It was, of course, written by Dmitri Tiomkin, lyrics by Ned Washington. Something very interesting how Clint Eastwood ended up playing the part. Apparently he was visiting a mate on a studio lot when an executive saw him walking across the lot and said, "Wow, he looks just like a cowboy." So that's how he got the part. It's quite funny, actually. And here's a tune you might recognise, and it was from a movie which was the first X-rated movie to win an Oscar. And it is, of course, the theme from Midnight Cowboy, written by John Barry, our very own John Barry. Dustin Hoffman and John Voight. Interesting, this was, because Dustin Hoffman dressed up as a tramp and insisted upon meeting the producers on the streets of New York so they could see that he really could play the part, because they thought he was too sophisticated to play a tramp. And he even put stones in his shoes so that he walked with a limp when he was... when he was acting the part. Both Voight and Hoffman were up for Best Actor in this movie, but they lost out to, of course, the King Cowboy, John Wayne, in True Grit that year. Another interesting thing about this movie is that a studio executive, not the same one that spotted Clint Eastwood, probably, sent the director, Schlesinger, a memo saying that he thought they should clean the movie up, add a few more songs, and then offer it to Elvis Presley. So there you go. Elvis Presley playing a male prostitute. Interesting. And now we're moving on to a song by B.J. Thomas.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops are falling on my head. Soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me. It won't till happiness steps up to greet me. Raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me.
Yeah, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, of course, written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, from the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And you might be interested to know that it was originally going to be called The Sundance Kid and Butch Cassidy, and it was going to have Steve McQueen playing the Sundance Kid alongside Paul Newman. But, of course, McQueen dropped out, and they had to reverse the names in the title because Newman was such a bigger star than Robert Redford. But it gets even more complicated than that, because Redford and Newman were due to play each other's role. Now, get your head round that. Dustin Hoffman was considered even for the role of Butch Cassidy. And in the scene, this is quite interesting, in the scene where the bull charges them, the production crew had to spray something nasty on the bull's testicles to make it go mad. And it seemed to like it because it wanted to do it about three times, I think. You may or may not know that the Sundance Film Festival was started by Robert Redford, and he named it because of this film, because it was the film that catapulted him into international stardom. He was a virtual unknown before this movie. Again, a fabulous Western with a difference. And here's Bob Hope playing Painless Potter, singing Buttons and Bowls.
A Western ranch is just a branch of nowhere junction to me. Give me the city where living's pretty and the gals wear finery. Oh, east is east and west is west, and the wrong un I have chose. Let's go where you keep on wearing those frills and flowers and buttons and bows, rings and things and buttons and bows. Yep. Don't bury me in this prairie, take me where the cement grows. Let's move down to some big town where they love a gal by the cut of her clothes, and you'll stand out in buttons and bows. I love you in buckskin or skirts that you've homespun, but I love you longer, stronger, where your friends don't tote a gun. My bones denounce the buckboard bounce and a cactus hurts my toes. Let's vamoose where gals keep using those silks and satins and linen that shows, and you're all mine in buttons and bows. Don't bury me in this here prairie, take me where the cement grows. Let's move down to that big town where they love a girl by the cut of her clothes, and you stand out in buttons and bows.
Wide open spaces don't suit me like a roof. I will love you longer, stronger, where the stake ain't on the hook.
Well, that follows. My bones denounce the buckboard bounce, and that cactus hurts my toes. Let's vamoose where gals keep using those silks and satins and linen that shows, and you're all mine in buttons and bows. And another thing, give me eastern trimming where women are women in high silk hose and peekaboo clothes and French perfume that rocks the room and buttons and bows, buttons and bows, buttons and bows, buttons and bows.
Great. That was, of course, Bob Hope playing Painless Potter, the dentist who goes into the Wild West and meets Jane Russell. God, what a thing to do, go into the Wild West and meet Jane Russell. Fantastic. And she was, of course, playing Calamity Jane, one of those great Western characters, creates a love interest in a Western. Hey, let's use Calamity Jane again. There were loads of films made using her as the romantic interest. And the interesting thing about Bob Hope's character, Painless Potter, he was a dentist, is that there was actually a dentist called Painless Parker in the 1890s, which is when this film is supposed to be set. And he had a horse-drawn show which went round the Wild West, and he offered to extract people's teeth for 50 cents a time. And he said that if the extraction wasn't painless, he'd give $50 to the patient. Well, of course, he got a lot of people coming up, taking him up on that bet. But unfortunately for them, he had a band playing whilst he did the extraction, so to drown out the groans from their pain. And he gave them a cup of whiskey or a cup of hydrocaine, which is a solution of cocaine. This film was remade in 1968 as The Shakiest Gun in the West. I love that title. I haven't seen it. Don't know anything about it apart from that. And Hope and Russell followed the film up with a sequel called Son of Paleface, which is just as fun. There's some fantastic animation sequences in it. I would really recommend you to watch it. And of course, that song Buttons and Bows won an Oscar for the best song in a movie. And it was the highest grossing Western parody film until Blazing Saddles came along. So there you go. And here we're going to go to another movie starring Calamity Jane, or starring someone playing Calamity Jane, and this time it's Doris Day.
Oh, the Deadwood stages are rolling on over the plains, with the curtains flapping and the driver a-slapping the reins. A beautiful sky, a wonderful day. Whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. Oh, the Deadwood stages are heading on over the hills, where the engine arrows are thicker than porcupine quills. Dangerous land, no time to delay. So whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. We're heading straight for town, loaded down with the fancy cargo, care of Wells and Fargo, Illinois. Boy, oh, the Deadwood stages are coming on over the crest, like a homing pigeon that's a hankering after its nest. 23 miles we've covered today. So whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. The wheels go turning round, homeward bound. Can't you hear them humming? Happy times are coming for to stay. Hey, we'll be home tonight by the light of the silvery moon. And my heart's a-thumping like a mandolin a-plucking a tune. When I get home, I'm fixing to stay. So whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. Whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away. Introducing Henry Miller, just as busy as a fizzy sarsaparilla. Ain't a showman any smarter, operates the Golden Garter where the cream of Deadwood City come to dine. And I'm glad to say he's a very good friend of mine. Hi Joe, say, where'd you get them fancy clothes? I know off some feller's laundry line. Hi Bo, aren't you the prairie rose smelling like a watermelon vine? Here's the man the sheriff watches. On his gun there's more than 27 notches. On the draw there's no one faster, and you're flirting with disaster when Bill Hickok's reputation you malign. And I'm glad to say he's a very good friend of a friend of mine. Oh, and the throat's as dry as a desert thistle in May. In the Golden Garter, gonna wet my whistle today. Last of the bars, a three-legged crow. Set 'em up, Joe, set 'em up, Joe, set 'em up, Joe. Set 'em up, Joe.
So there you go. In Hollywood, anyone can play Calamity Jane. You've got Sex on Legs Jane Russell to Doris Day, a gay pinup. There you go. Amazing, isn't it? So Calamity Jane, this was a musical, The Deadwood Stage, Whip Crack Away. This wasn't the most famous song from the film. That was called Secret Love. Once I Had a Secret Love by Fane and Webster, which she actually recorded in one take. And that was a massive hit back then. Doris Day says this is her favourite film role ever, which is amazing. And when she saw rushes of herself at the beginning of the shooting, she was shocked at how high her voice was, so she immediately took her voice down in register so she sounded as tough as she looked. Well, Calamity Jane had quite an interesting life. She was a dishwasher, a dancehall girl, a nurse, an ox team driver, and even a prostitute. She was reputedly a great shot and got her name Calamity Jane in Goose Creek, Wyoming, from her commanding officer, Captain Egan, whom she rescued from a catastrophic attack by the Indians, and he said, when he was lying there injured in her arms, "I name you Calamity Jane, the heroine of the plains." She was apparently reputedly infatuated with Wild Bill Hickok, and some people say that she actually gave birth to a daughter from him. She helped save passengers on a stage from Plains Indians, taking over the reins and delivering them to Deadwood City. But then again, she was a massive liar, so you don't know what to believe, do you? And now we're going to go to some spaghetti. Il buono, il brutto, il cattivo, to be correct in Italian, the good and the bad and the ugly. And although they're called spaghetti westerns, they're mostly shot in Spain, but they start off in Cinecittà outside Rome. And the bridge across the river that was blown up in that, it wasn't a set, it was a real bridge. And the Spanish army engineers that agreed to blow it up, they only agreed to do it if their captain was allowed to do it, but he unfortunately misheard the order and they blew it up before the cameras were rolling, so they had to rebuild it and then blow it up again. So there you go, these sort of things happen. Eastwood, Clint Eastwood in this, it was the third film in the trilogy, he didn't really want to do it, and he said, look, in the first film I was one, in the second there were two of us, and now there are three. In the next one I'll probably be with the whole US cavalry. But Sergio Leone, the director, of course, sweetened him up with giving him a Ferrari and a share of the shot at the US profits. And Tarantino has called it the greatest directed movie of all time. Now, when you're watching this, you might find it irritating that all the actors are dubbed into English and the lips don't sync at all well with what you're hearing. But it's because all the cast, they all acted in their native languages. Leone thought that was the way to do it. And it was all dubbed into post-production because that's what they used to do in Italian films, in all Italian films. Until recently, it was thought that theatrical actors could deliver the dialogue much better than film actors. because film actors were sneered at in early Italian cinema. So all Italian films are redubbed by different actors. The soundtrack album to this, Ennio Morricone, of course, stayed in the US charts for a year, which is amazing. A couple of interesting quotes from critics. The New York Times described this film as the most expensive, pious and repellent movie in the history of its genre. And the LA Times, on the other side of the states, called it the bad, the dull and the interminable. There you go. And Eli Waller was in this third film in the trilogy with Clint Eastwood. He can claim to be the only man who slept with Clint Eastwood, as all the hotels were full when they arrived in Madrid and they had to share a bed. So there you go.
When Liberty Valance rode to town, the women folk would hide, they'd hide. When Liberty Valance walked around, the men would step aside. 'Cause the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was mighty good. From out of the east a stranger came, a law book in his hand. Oh man, the kind of a man the west would need to tame a troubled land. 'Cause the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was mighty good. Many a man would face his gun, and many a man would fall. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all. The love of a girl can make a man stay on when he should go. Stay on, just trying to build a peaceful life where love is free to grow. But the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When the final showdown came at last, a law book was no good. Alone and afraid, she prayed that he'd return that fateful night. Oh, that night, when nothing she said could keep her man from going out to fight. From the moment a girl gets to be full grown, the very first thing she learns, when two men go out to face each other, only one returns. Everyone heard two shots ring out, one shot made Liberty fall. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all.
Yeah, Gene Pitney singing the title song from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. But although it was the title song, it's quite strange because Burt Bacharach and Hal David, the writers, they wrote this song after the movie had come out. Very bizarre. And then it was added later. Of course, John Wayne, James Stewart and Lee Marvin, all in the same movie. Fantastic. And Lee Marvin's a great villain as Liberty Valance. It's Sergio Leone's favourite John Ford movie. Black and White, which was a choice of John Ford's. He'd been shooting a lot of movies in colour around this time, but he decided to go for black and white for this. And now we're going to go to Kill Bill, which, of course, was Quentin Tarantino's movie. And this guy is a complete Western fanatic, obviously. When you see this movie, it's samurai warriors acting out a Western story. But, of course, we all know that a lot of Westerns came from the samurai stories anyway. And this is a track from the excellent soundtrack by a group called Shingon, I think that's how you pronounce it, which means badass or awesome in Spanish or Mexican. And interestingly enough, Robert Rodriguez formed this band to play the soundtrack for his movie Once Upon a Time in Mexico. And if you listen to their recorded output, they're pretty good for a put-together band. And this is a track from Kill Bill called Malaguena Salerosa.
Bonitos ojos tienes debajo de esas dos cejas, debajo de esas dos cejas, qué bonitos ojos tienes. Ellos me quieren mirar, pero si tú no los dejas, pero si tú no los dejas, ni siquiera parpadear. Malagueña, salerosa. Quisiera besar tus labios, quisiera, malagueña salerosa, y decirte, niña hermosa.
Yeah, so in a way, sort of Kill Bill is a sort of modern spaghetti western. I mean, talk about paying tribute to your idols. There's even music by Morricone, which Tarantino has put in the soundtrack. So he's constantly paying homage to these great movies. Which takes us on to another movie that was based on a Japanese film. The film in question was called The Seven Samurai, and they turned it into a Western and called it The Magnificent Seven. Yeah, this soundtrack wasn't released until the sequel came out, when the music was re-recorded by, of course, Elmore Bernstein. The interesting thing is that Dmitri Tiomkin, good old Dmitri Tiomkin, was due to compose a score for this, because he was John Sturges' favourite composer, score writer. They'd worked many times before, but they fell out before the film started. So Tiomkin was replaced. There you go. That's what happens. James Coburn got the part in the movie. He was recommended by his old schoolmate, Robert Vaughn. And it was cast very quickly, this movie, because there was an actor's strike on at the time, and there were some very funny goings on between Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen. They were constantly competing with each other, and Yul Brynner was worried that McQueen constantly was doing something in the scenes they were in together to take people's attention away from him. He'd be fidgeting with his hat or moving around a horse or something, so he was pissed off about that. And he was also concerned that McQueen would look taller than him, so he always acted his bits on a mound of earth. I mean, these actors, what's going on? But it's Yul Brynner's, it's his own fault, because it was his idea to put McQueen in the film anyway. He was one of the producers of the movie. There were some interesting problems of local censorship where it was shot in Mexico, because the local censors were worried that the Mexican people in the film weren't depicted properly. And so you always see them wearing very clean clothes in the movie. It's very funny. So there you go. Based on the Japanese film by Kurosawa, The Seven Samurai. And now we're going to go to some Leonard Cohen music.
All the sisters of mercy, they are not departed or gone. They were waiting for me when I thought that I just can't go on. And they brought me their comfort, and later they brought me this song. Oh, I hope you run into them, you who've been traveling so long. Begins with your family, but soon it comes round to your soul. Well, I've been where you're hanging, I think I can see how you're pinned. When you're not feeling holy, your loneliness says that you've sinned. Tear off and condemn. They will bind you with love that is graceful and green as a stem. Read their address by the moon, and you won't make me jealous if I hear that they sweeten your night. We weren't lovers like that, and besides, it would still be all right. We weren't lovers like that, and besides, it would still be all right.
Wonderful. Sisters of Mercy by Leonard Cohen from his first album, and one of my favourite albums. And Robert Altman, the director of McCabe and Mrs. Miller, which featured this song and a couple of others by Leonard Cohen, it was his favourite album as well. And in fact, he'd bought several copies and worn them out because he played them so often. And then he forgot about the music and started making another movie. And then he was in Paris after shooting McCabe and Mrs. Miller, and was thinking about music for the film, and suddenly heard the album again and decided he must have Leonard Cohen's music in the film. So he got hold of him, and they managed to work something out with the relevant record companies. The film was shot outside Vancouver, totally in sequence, which is interesting. And a lot of the extras and stagehands that you see, because they're in the process of building a new town, they were actually Vietnam draft dodgers. It was Keith Carradine's film debut. Of course, Warren Beatty and Judy Christie were a couple when this was when they were making this movie. And interestingly enough, Warren Beatty said that he fell for Judy Christie when he saw her shaking hands with the Queen. How about that? And now, back to my childhood. Yeah, of course, The Lone Ranger. Well, it was a movie, actually. They did make a movie of it. The TV series had 221 episodes. Amazing. And the two lead characters, Clayton Moore playing The Lone Ranger and Jay Silverhills playing Tonto, they were in the movie as well. And the music of that Rossini music, the William Tell Overture, completely inseparable from The Lone Ranger for me. Interestingly, the TV series, it used a lot of classical music, and this was to keep the production costs low because the classical music was in the public domain, of course, and they didn't have to pay to use it. Lone Ranger, it took the form of a radio show, TV show, films, and there was an animated version, and there was a video game, and there have been books. And now, believe it or not, they're thinking of making a new Lone Ranger film, and Johnny Depp is going to play Tonto. And here we go into some more Frankie Lane.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling, on this our wedding day. Do
not forsake me, oh my darling. Wait, wait long. I do not know what fate awaits me. I only know I must be brave, and I must face a man who hates me. Or lie a coward, a craven coward, or lie a coward in my grave. Or to be torn twixt love and duty, supposing I lose my fair haired beauty. Look at that big hand move along near in high noon. He made a vow while in state's prison, vowed it would be my life for his, and I'm not afraid of death, but oh, what will I do if you leave me? Do not forsake me, oh my darling. You made that promise as a bride. Do not forsake me, oh my darling. Although you're grieving, don't think of leaving. Now that I need you by my side, wait along, wait along, wait along, wait along.
Yeah, of course, Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, sang by Frankie Lane. Not the version that was in the film High Noon, but a much bigger hit than Tex Ritter's version. It was the first Oscar-winning song from a non-musical film. And it was a real-time movie as well, almost. You can start watching the movie and set your clocks when they show you a clock, and it'll almost to the minute take you through the movie. It was a very controversial casting at the time because Gary Cooper was 30 years older than Grace Kelly. Tut, tut, tut. A lot of American presidents cite this as their favourite movie. Probably all that standing firm against evil. Eisenhower quoted it as his favourite movie. Bill Clinton saw it 17 times, apparently, when he was in his office, amongst doing other things. It was the film debut of Lee Van Cleef. What else can I tell you? Gregory Peck, Charlton Heston, Marlon Brando, Montgomery Clift, and even Kirk Douglas. They were all offered the part but turned down the role that Gary Cooper played. And they must have been mad. I mean, Grace Kelly, the chance to act opposite Grace Kelly, beautiful Grace Kelly. It was shot in 28 days of filming. There were only 10 days of rehearsal. Of course, Gary Cooper grabbed hold of Grace Kelly when they were making the film. Just during the production, they were an item. Cooper didn't wear any makeup. The director said it was to highlight his worried look. But then John Wayne didn't like the movie. He called it the most un-American thing I've seen in my whole life. And in Russia, it was criticized as a glorification of the individual, which is exactly why it's championed in the West. And it was made when the blacklisting of Reds in America was taking place across America. So it had an interesting political subplot going on there. It was a Western for people that don't like Westerns.